This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Little boy, you are there, you are there.
Good afternoon, this is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Near the end of last year, on December 14th, Kee Tuan Chai was here with a couple of others to tell about his play, one that he wrote, and which was staged twice in Singapore, The Swordfish, then The Concubine. Then in Singapore, the actors used his words. The production last year in Kuala Lumpur was in Mandarin. This time around, coming up in less than 2 weeks, Swordfish, then The Concubine will be performed in English as written by Kee Tuan Chai, who is here with two performers, Hannah Nadira and Ifis Alauddin. Welcome, folks.
Hi.
I noticed, though, that it is not called The Swordfish, then The Concubine. You have changed the title a little bit.
Yes,
Is it for aesthetics or what?
I've updated it. I think it's a more catchy title, Swordfish plus Concubine.
And plus.
And it's in keeping with the times, you know, where we tend to use plus quite a lot these days, computeries and all. And
emoji.
And so but this play, anyway, has undergone so much transformation since the first time I wrote it. When it began live, what, 17, 18 years ago, it was actually called The Fall of Singapura. Then later on, I changed it to The Swordfish, then The Concubine, which was the title used in the Singapore premiere production in 2008. And also for the Mandarin translation done last year.
But wasn't there one in 2011 also?
Oh, yes, in 2011, yes. In 2011, actually, it was called Swordfish plus Concubine, : The Fall of Singapura.
So when you take out the then, which is a relative conjunctive, when you take that out, how does that change the title?
Well, the then was put in there to show that first it was the swordfish attack and then it was followed by the concubine story. But in this case now, swordfish plus concubine is an integrated whole. So the story flows. Even the structure of the play has changed drastically because when I first wrote it, it didn't start with the swordfish attack. It actually started with the trial of the concubine. And then, when it came time to sentence her, the Bendahara intervenes and tells the Sultan, before you make a decision, I wanted to tell you a story of ancient times so that you do not make the same mistake. And then he starts telling the story of the swordfish attack. And after that is done, we come back to the present, to the sentencing of the concubine. So that was the original structure. Now, I'm taking a linear narrative, starting from the swordfish attack right on to the end.
Funny, for me, the swordfish, then the concubine, has that linear narrative because then indicates a time. This happened, then that happened. In fact, just the swordfish plus concubine seem to be less linear in its narration.
That's quite true, but that's not so important for me. I think it's more important to have a catchy title.
Even with a catchy title, based on my understanding, the first time it was performed in English in Singapore and the second time, they were done by different directors.
That's right.
And somebody wrote about it and said that actually they are in some ways quite different.
Yes. That's right.
But what about this one? So do you really have three versions now?
Oh, yes, definitely. Because if you had seen the 2008 production and you were going to see the current one, you would realize that both are quite different. About only 50% of what you saw in 2008 is in the current version. It has undergone a lot of change.
What are the changes? Are they substantive changes or are they changes in terms of how it's being presented?
Substantive in terms of structure, in terms of the development of the storyline. And of course, I'm making it the role of the concubine even stronger. Yeah.
So you have done some rewriting since 2008, 2011. And then, of course, last year when it was done in Mandarin, which I understand you don't speak.
Right. I'm ashamed to say, yeah.
By the way, how well received was that?
Which one?
The Mandarin one.
Oh, that was very good. I think Loh Kok Man, who directed it, did a fabulous job of it. And a lot of people loved it. Yes, the play has undergone a lot of change. Every time after it was staged, I revised it significantly. So that's why it's what it is today.
What's driving the change?
Oh, to improve it further.
I know, but when you improve it, it's not just a matter of, I want to improve it. I assume that there were specific things that you saw in the production, the earlier production or earlier productions.
Oh, yes.
And then you compare and contrast and say, okay, no, this one worked really well. And in light of this present production, this is what I could do. So what were the things that prompted these?
Well, you know, when you see a production, you realize that some things work well, some things don't work so well. So when you revise, you would want to change the things that don't work so well. The first one was not as cogent and tight. I decided to try and make it more so. And it's been like that. And then as time went on, I realized also that, hey, maybe if I do it this way or do it that way, I will get a better result. So even after Kok Man's Mandarin translation came out, I still was not satisfied with it. And I went on to further revise it.
Is that the nature of any kind of art, that you strive for some kind of imagined perfection?
Like, yes.
It is never attainable, so therefore you're always tinkering.
That's right. So I see this as a living organism, and as far as possible, I strive to distill it to its quintessential form. And I hope that I've got it like this time.
I remember a comment from an art teacher. He says, you know, sometimes artists get so fixated about striving towards the ideal that they tinker and they tinker and they tinker. And especially with visual art, not so much with things, with words, I don't know if that applies, but with visual art, you say you can tinker to the point that suddenly all your colors become mud.
I don't think that's the case with Saltfish Plus Concubine, I have to say.
Doing it in English, doing it in Chinese, what are the differences? I'm asking this question because now that the Chinese production is over, before when we were talking about it, it was, you're anticipating. Now it's no longer anticipating. You have something to fall back on. What are the differences between performing it in Chinese, having folks dressed in Malay costume, sarong with the headdress and using a kris, speaking Mandarin, and then folks in Singapore performed it in English? What are the differences?
Yeah, I think when you do it in Mandarin and you have Chinese actors playing Malay characters and all that, especially in Kok Man's production where you use a stylization from Chinese theatre, it gives it a different kind of feeling. It gives it a different effect. I think it worked very well in Kok Man's production. But in English, you can still do it. You can still stylize it. But perhaps, you know, using other kinds of forms, basing it on other kinds of theatrical forms, and still be able to pull it off wearing Malay costumes. Now, for my production, we are not actually wearing straight out Malay costume. What we've got on board is a costume designer who has done a lot of work, and her name is Dominique Devorcine, and she's come out with costumes that are kind of eclectic, which fits in very well with the production style and approach. And she said, well, I don't want it to look like the costumes that were done in 2008, and I don't want them to look like the costumes that were done by Kok Man, so I'm going to create my own. And what she's come out with is what I would call the Vosine Originals.
No sense of a Nusantara? Or it still has the sense of Nusantara?
Definitely, it still has to have that. And also in the kind of material she uses, you know, songket and so on, and batik and so on. But the design will not be traditional, out traditional.
Without seeing it, it's hard for us to make any kind of evaluation or any kind of a guess what exactly is being presented to us.
Yes.
But we will hold that. And I would want to bring in these two people that you have here with you, Ifis and Hannah. I want to talk to Ifis about being a theatre instructor at our National Performing Arts School and then being in a production where there is that kind of crossover. How does his own education and as an instructor inform how he performs in such a production as this? I'm speaking with Ki Tuan Chai, playwright, director and producer of Swordfish and Concubine, and he's with two actors, Hana Nadira and Ifis Alauddin, both of whom have not spoken a word yet. But we will bring them in. Ki Tuan Chai has been giving us a bit of the history of his approach to writing this production and its development. Coming up, the actors give us their take. This is Front Row, The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng speaking with three people who are in Swordfish plus Concubine, The Then Has Disappeared. The three are Ki Tuan Chai, who is the director, playwright, and also the producer, and two actors, Ifis Alauddin and Hana Nadira. Welcome again.
Hi.
Now, Ifis, you teach theatre, you've been studying theatre. There's a play that has folks dress kind of Nusantara, use English. Does it work? Or what needs to be done to make it work? I'm bringing this to bear simply because I saw a production at your institution, folks performing Shakespeare's Macbeth, but using Malay. What was interesting was they were dressed in leather jackets, jeans, boots, giving the impression that it's very cold because nothing changes in terms of the names of the people, still called Macbeth, and the references were still to Dunsinane. And you are supposed to get the sense of we are in Scotland, but these are people speaking BM. Mm-hmm. It didn't work for me. How would you respond to doing productions where you use our Malaysian language, but setting it in a cold country with all of the trappings of the names of that country, like Macbeth?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a process of trial and error. So with Macbeth, maybe for you it didn't work, but maybe for some it worked. We also had a Hamlet in a Nusantara feel.
For me, that worked.
Yeah. So I think it's, again, about the content and how do you link it with the form. And it takes a lot of time for a director to basically try to adapt it, try to make it in sync, which is, for me, a hard work. And it needs a lot of time to research and all that. Like Swordfish as well, it has a content based on Sejarah Melayu, Selatu Selatin, which for me is very relevant until now. And then Anchai is doing it in his own version of unique. I think it comes together with the whole acting and the language. Your question of Macbeth, I think it worked for me. I'm not defending my institution or anything, but it's, again, it's a process. And it's the student's idea as well, and trying to...
No, I'm not against any experimentation. At the end of the day, I'm looking at, well, does it work or doesn't work? Because I've seen, like I say, Hamlet with Nusantara. And even though the name, I think for the most part, remains quite close to the same as was used Hamlet, somehow with the use of the gamelan, all that seemed to work quite fine. Because there's also another reference to another play which was done here, Macbeth. But with Chinese opera costume, a lot of the theatre practitioners, a lot of other people that I talked to, they said it just didn't work because there is a rhythm in the language. English has its own rhythms, more so when you have, with Shakespeare, the iambic pentameter. Mm-hmm. Chinese opera has a totally different rhythm. It is not iambic pentameter. I'm not sure how these things were looked at to make it work. I'm not against any kind of experimentation. I think we should. We should always be pushing the envelope. Mm. But the question was, as a theatre practitioner, as an instructor, how do you think of these kinds of projects?
Mm-hmm. Again, it's a question of taste as well. And looking at what's happening in society as well. I'm not quite sure what happened with Macbeth because now my mind is like thinking of what was wrong with the play. Probably because the content didn't mix well with the concept. It didn't work. So I'm not so sure.
If I may add, I think if you use a certain theatrical form, like as you mentioned, the use of Chinese wayang for that particular Macbeth production, if you use it as an embellishment, then it will not work. But if you use it as something that is incorporated organically and it arises through a process of rehearsing or working at it and it comes out naturally, then it can work.
What you're saying, then, it cannot be superficial?
No, definitely not.
Which leads me to the question, is there such a thing as, if you're performing a play in BM, in Bahasa Malaysia, your body moves in one way. When you're performing in English, your body moves in another way. I'm asking this of the both of you because I know you both perform in English and in Malay. I won't ask you about if you were to speak in Chinese, how would your body move? Because you don't speak the language. You have not done plays in Chinese yet. What's that, Hannah, what's your response to that?
First of all, definitely there's a difference in rhythm, in language. And I haven't really been conscious of it, but I'm sure subconsciously the rhythm would affect the body movement as well. Just the language, you know, like Malay is more sopan. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's just my opinion. But like, you know, there's this gentle quality to it. And then English is less so. So I feel like, yeah, there's definitely a difference subconsciously. I haven't done it consciously, but yeah.
Now you're forced to think about it.
I think I'm with Hannah on this because, like what you said, the language gives different rhythm and tempo and beat to the bodies of the performer. So I think subconsciously we perform differently. I may have acted in more Malay plays than English plays, and I can... This is my first English play after 5 years, so it feels a bit weird. But as for my characters, yeah, I have a few characters. It allows me to speak English in a way that is close to me, how I speak English in a normal daily life. So it's not so different, but I can still feel the difference in my body as I act my characters.
Yeah, like there's so much more ease when I perform in Malay somehow, because it's my mother tongue, maybe.
Because this is a question that has often come up. Some have said, you know, when we perform English language plays, on the whole, there is so much more work needs to be put into place, especially when we are doing an American script or a British script. If we're doing one of Kit Wan Chai's, which is done with Malaysians speaking the language, then we don't bat an eyelid when we see somebody on stage moving and speaking English, whether the person's Indian, Chinese, or Malay, or line.
Yes, spot on. Yeah. You're spot on that. That's right. We have no problems with that. In terms of the play, although it's in English, well, we have a multiracial cast, and they all play essentially Malay characters, but I have not seen anything jarring about it. They've all taken to it quite naturally.
Which kind of leads me to ask, when we perform an American play, do we need to have an American accent?
I've always been against that. When I was doing Death of a Salesman in 1989, I was playing Willie Loman. I insisted that I would not play it with an American accent. The director agreed. And I think it's better that way, you know. The American accent, it's just an embellishment again. And it can sound false. And that's what we don't want, because we want to get to the truth of the character, the truth of what he does. And so the accent is just surface, superficial.
So getting to the truth of the character, Hannah, the concubine, what is the truth about this concubine?
What do you mean?
What happened to her? What was your access to the character?
Well, if you take away the concubine label, she's just a girl, you know? She's just a girl.
Not a woman?
Well, she's 16.
Okay. A girl.
Well, a girl, a woman. Well, I'll say a girl because she's young and she has all these ideals about the world. And so she's kind of naive because she's also privileged. So she lives in a sheltered world. I mean, she's educated, but she's also not very aware of how the real world works. So she speaks up and she tries to stand up for people and tries to, you know, assert change in the society, and which is all great. But once you grow up, you know that it's...
Doesn't work quite that same way that you have in your mind.
Yeah. So the truth of her is that she's just really passionate about making changes in the world, and it's just unfortunate that, you know, things have to go the way they do. Sometimes, yeah, the world is not very kind.
What do you have to find to identify with her?
I had to find that side of me that used to speak up for people who were weaker or, you know, oppressed or less, you know. Yeah, I was just talking about this the other day. Like, I had to go back to that place, you know, when I was younger, and I would actually speak up for the less fortunate people in my class because, you know, nobody wanted to hang out with them or whatever, and I'd hang out with them and I'd get lice and all that. But yeah, you know, that side, you know, when we were innocent and we'd still just look at people as people and everybody had the same rights, you know, equal rights. We didn't see colour or different status, you know, position, wealth position and all that. So have to go back to there and just be human again and really care for everyone just as they are.
Hafiz, what character do you play?
I play Rizkal. Rizkal is basically the clown character in Swordfish. He and his partner, Logot, played by Bella Rahim, these two are basically the storytellers who tells the audience what's happening on the stage. This character also reminds me of the form of Bangsawan, because all the Malay opera, which has extra turns in between scenes. And in between scenes, you would have this Tauke Panggung coming up, telling the audience what's going to happen on the next scene. Rizkal is a very simplistic, funny character who likes to ask questions. I think it was intentionally written that Rizkal asks questions, you know, to probably mirror some of the audiences who maybe have no clue what's happening. So, and Logot will then answer all of his questions.
Is this question and answer session mostly comedic?
Yes, but beyond that, there's more. They also reflect on reality, especially contemporary reality.
Is this the part of the play that becomes satire, where you use humor as the vehicle to point out certain issues?
Yes, but not only through the clowns, but also in some of the scenes, there are satirical touches.
Beyond the actors that you have here in the studio, who are the other people involved?
Alfred Lowe, Sandra Sodhi, Naam Murad, Jeff Gregory Z, Kaha Akila, Bella Rahim, as mentioned by Ifis earlier, Lam Gui Ket, Amanda Ang, and then we also have a 12-year-old actor named Joel Timothy Lowe.
Who is he?
Oh, of course, and Arif Hamizan. Yes, yes, yes.
We don't care about him. Who is this 12-year-old Timothy Lowe?
Oh, he's a veteran. At 12. Yeah, he's done a lot of shows. And he's good. He can do the hip-hop dances that we have in the play too, because he's into that. He's a smart boy.
What other production has he been in? Have we seen him somewhere
Aladdin,
before?
Most of the Infinity productions.
Yeah, Infinity Academy. Yes, yeah. And he's recently been chosen to appear in Ola Bola. Yeah.
Yes.
And a few days ago, he was also chosen to ask the participants in a beauty pageant questions.
Must be a cute 12-year-old to get all these opportunities also.
He's smart and he's cute. That's why he was cast.
The music that you'll have for this performance is coming from Rhythm in Bronze.
Yeah.
Rhythm in Bronze,
of course, is a fabulous gamelan troupe. They are very well known and they have been playing in a lot of shows. They are also very suitable for this production because they also do work that is quite fusion-y. They don't do like traditional gamelan. They do an eclectic form. So they just fit in very nicely.
Original compositions for this production or something
done by
that...
them, yes. What you will see is gamelan meeting hip-hop in a play. And they have taken to it like ducks to water, you know. They compose the tunes and they fit very well, the hip-hop rhythm.
I would assume when this play was first staged in Singapore, this hip-hop, gamelan, all of these were not part of any of the productions.
Oh, it was. When I first wrote the play, it was already there. I mean, 17, 18 years ago. The sequence called Gamelan Rap was one of them, you know. But in Singapore, they took a somewhat different approach and they did it more Dikir Barat in style for the Gamelan Rap sequences. But for this one, it's going to be quite hip-hoppy.
When you mentioned that the costume is eclectic, now when you are talking about hip-hop and gamelan and the fusion of their music, it seems like the form of the play is quite eclectic also.
Very. You know, it's very eclectic. I mean, we are using all kinds of influences, you know, drawing from East and West. In terms of the writing and staging style, it goes from Brecht to Bangsawan. And we also use movements based on Wayang Kulit, choreographed by Ifis. We also have Malay dance, Zapin, and Joget, all done not in their pristine style, but also because our choreographer, Philo Adam, he's fantastic. He also believes in eclecticism. So he's also doing a kind of fusion-y, even with Bhangra, which we also have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's going to be very eclectic.
The story is no longer set in some time in the past and when the swordfish attacked Singapore.
Well, it never was very clearly stated right from the beginning that it is set in the past, but it is supposed to be, yes, some, you know, timeless past, if you can put it that way.
Imagine the past.
Yes, yeah. But there are always contemporary allusions in the play throughout. For instance, you have Laxmana, who spouts lines from Shakespeare.
Swordfish plus Concubine opens Thursday, November 2nd and runs till Sunday, November 5th. Showtimes are at 8:30 p.m. with matinees on Saturday and Sunday at 3 p.m. A total of 6 shows and Pentas 1 KL pack. Tickets are priced at R75 and R95 with discounts at R45. This production is also a fundraiser for the family of Ui Yao Jin, who was an RTM orchestra conductor. At 78, he suffers from Alzheimer's, coupled with having a 53-year-old son who recently underwent surgery to remove a brain tumor. So folks, good cause. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.